Today's topic, does God hide the truth? And the first time I read that, I said, well, of course he hides the truth. We look at the world, the state that it's in, the wars, the unkindness, and we think, if there were truth here, how could all this be? And then I began to think about that, and I thought, well, what is truth? And so I began to look at my own life and begin to think, how did I first approach truth? And I remember I was, you know, very young, 5, 6 years old, something like that. And I used to have bad dreams. And I'd see faces and I'd just be terrified. And after a while, I realized that this was not going to go away and it was something I was going to have to deal with. And so I would pray, and then I would look here at this point, right about here on my forehead. And after a while, there'd be a little light that would show up there. And as soon as that light came, I could go to sleep. And then, oh, another 3 or 4 years later, I used to enjoy going out to the railroad right-of-way. And I would lay down there in the tall grass and look up at the sun, and the wind would be blowing, and it was just calm, and there was no one out there. And there would be this beautiful red-orange light that I would see, and I could just lay there for hours on end and feel totally at peace. So each of us has something within us that recognizes truth. So I was probably just out of college, and I realized it was time to find out what truth really meant for me. I was raised Catholic, and I believed in a number of the things that were taught, but there was no one there that actually exemplified the teachings for me. So I would look to see, but people were just talking. They weren't actually showing that truth. And so I decided that, for me, meditation was the way. So I began to meditate. One day, I just picked a day and sat down and started to meditate. And after, it was a while, it was a number of months, because meditation is one of those things that takes a while to get into. I got to a place where everything was very still, and what they talk about it, God being totally other, and the meditation switched to another place that I had never seen before. And it was just a quietness and a truth, an absolute truth that was there that I had never seen. And so I thought, well, boy, this is amazing. So I took all of my little foibles, fears, you know, desires, everything, and I held it up next to this truth, and it didn't touch it. This truth was absolutely unmoving. And so from there I realized, yes, truth does exist. Yes, you can realize truth. So I know for a number of people, especially people new in the church here, new on the path, or people who don't enjoy meditation, they go, well, where does that leave me? But every single person can find that truth within, because that's the space in your heart that doesn't move. There is a center within us, and without that, we would have dissolved long ago. Now, we can find that. A number of people I've spoken with find it in nature. They go out walking, they go out riding, whatever it is, and there a stillness comes for them, and they feel that truth. I remember a story about Ramakrishna when he was young. I guess he was 8 or so. A saint from the 1800s in India. And his first experience of samadhi was walking along the road, a gray sky, and then a flight of birds, white birds, went over. And he was so struck by that experience that he went into samadhi and fell down. So that kind of experience is open to all of us. So when we think about truth, we think about, all right, now, what am I going to do to get to that truth? And the fortunate thing is, truth exists in your own heart. You can actually feel that truth. Truth is not a thought. When I first came upon this subject, I thought, well, I'll check Google and see what it says. So I typed in truth, and there's millions of hits, and I just thought, well, I read a few of them. I thought, well, that clearly is not going to get it. So I realized that truth was talked about in a number of different ways, but it was not actually the truth that I was looking for. So when you can begin to find that stillness within you, any way you do it, some people do martial arts, some people dance, they do something physical. The beauty of it is that you can anchor it in your own heart. And then once you do that, once you feel that truth, then you can have it at any time. And you must remember that that truth is not a thought. I remember Kriyananda, a story of Kriyananda told about his experiences in India. And he went to the Ganges and meditated deeply there for a number of weeks and got into a beautiful space, absolutely deep meditation space. And he said he'd never been that deep, and he expected that this would go on for forever. But then when he came out, he ran into some friends who had told him about the Book of Bhrigu, which is a prophecy book. And so that immediately got his brain spinning about prophecy and what that all means and the different yugas and this and that and the other thing. And his meditation experience went out the window. And he said, oh, I wish I had not done that. So once you contact that truth, make that as real as you can for yourself, because that's a sacred space. But it is the same space in everyone. Yogananda talks about the world being center, everywhere, circumference, nowhere. So that space within your heart that you feel is the same space that everyone feels. Truly an amazing experience. So, what does hide the truth? And there's the question. How come, since we feel that truth and we know it exists, why is it so long between times that we actually feel that truth? Well, mostly, it's our own habits, our own desires, our own wishes that hide the truth from us. Because if you take that truth that you feel and hold it, and then hold it here in your heart, and then project it up here to the point between the eyebrows, that's the secret. Because if it stays in the heart, it will begin to dissipate into emotion. So take it here, hold it up here, and then any thought that comes, come back to that truth, come back to that feeling. I don't know if you've tried this before, but I recommend it as a practice, because it will be a way for you to begin to change your life. We spend 24 hours a day in our likes and our dislikes. And that is what carries us away. If you ever spend any time sitting, thinking, a thought will come up, a positive thought, and you think, oh, that's nice. You go off this way. A negative thought, you go, oh. And the thoughts are only our reactions to things. If we had no reactions, we would not lose our center. So this is an attempt here for us to take that truth and hold it deeply within and let our reactions come and go, but then constantly bring it back to what truth is. I've been doing that this last week, and it's a fabulous experience because you begin to realize that you are that center. You are not any of the things that draw you off that center. So this is something I recommend for everyone here in the church. to spend a little time today just to sit and to meditate, or just to sit in the beautiful, go to the ocean, go anywhere that you're really touched, and feel your heart. Okay, once you've done that, then just offer that energy up to the point between the eyebrows. And any thought that comes in, go ahead and let it go. And let the next one go and the next one. And do that for as long as you can. If you can do it for a minute or two, that's great. But what that does is it begins to establish you in truth. You begin to identify with what doesn't move rather than what I like and what I don't like. So I want to leave you with that. Take that experience. Work with it, because you will not only change yourself, you will change all the world around you. Because as you change, everyone else will be impacted and the world will be a different place.
One of the hallmarks of human intelligence is our ability to reason. The more reasonable we are, the more adaptable and successful we tend to be. But reason has an essentially limited range of reliability, especially when it comes to matters of divinity. The mind of God is not within our capacity to grasp. We can talk about it, and we do, but its depth is beyond the reach of our comprehension. This morning, we're considering whether and to what extent God hides the truth. Guided by reason alone, we would have to say that there is a lot of truth unavailable to us. On the other hand, we have the testimony of hundreds of saints and ascended masters whose very lives reveal to us what reason leaves unanswered. It's extraordinary how we try to reason things out, and really what we know is that that isn't possible. We are on a treasure hunt here. And many people, most people perhaps, don't even know what that treasure is. They believe that it is something that involves the correct application of clever thinking. But of course, that is never going to work. The treasure is unavailable to us from that aspect. Look at the world around us, as Chidambara was saying. I mean, it's a rather strange place to have landed, wouldn't you say? I mean, you consider the events that comprise most of the evening news, and certainly the relentless interference in our personal lives and in our international affairs that is caused by egoic desires. The only way out is the way in. And the world is literally designed to obscure that from us. I mean, that's pretty bizarre. So how do we read the clues that lead us to that treasure? How do we go in that direction when the weight of the world is essentially misleading us, telling us that there are things we should want other than that going inside? Maybe you remember the beginning of the old Mission Impossible TV shows, where a phone would ring in some remote location and Jim Phelps was there to answer it and receive his assignment, and he had the option to accept or refuse it. Well, the real life version of that goes like this. The phone rings, and the voice on the other end says, Jim, this is your assignment. You know, your mission is to find out what the treasure is, where it is, and how to secure it. In all probability, Jim, people are going to be shooting at you every step of the way, and don't expect any help from the people you used to hang with, because now that you're looking for truth instead of just approval, they're likely to find you a little strange. And one more thing, Jim, there is no option here. This is your assignment, and you may take as long as you wish to fulfill it, but know that at the end of this incarnation, death is not an exit. You get to come back over and over until the job is finished. As I mentioned, we cannot grasp the mind of God, but considering our predicament, you certainly have to sense that God has a great sense of humor. Our lives, from his perspective, must look a lot like a Buster Keaton movie, only not so silent. And I'm sure he is amused by the energy that we invest in trying to beat the system. As a humorous aside, Douglas Adams, who's the author of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, had a theory about why the system always wins. He postulated that if everyone figured out how the universe functions and what it is for, it would instantly disappear and be replaced by something even more strange than the one that came before it. And he also had a theory that this has already happened. So here we are. The good news is that because we've been on this earth since this incarnation began, the weirdness of it seems quite natural. And the bad news is, because it seems quite natural, we tend to gravitate toward delusion and its distractions such as TV and the internet. Not necessarily bad things, but distractions. Back in the 1950s, I was part of the first TV generation. Game shows were all the rage, and one of them, my all-time favorite, was Beat the Clock. A fine example of comic art as an imitation of life. A contestant would race against time to accomplish a series of totally silly maneuvers in order to win a prize. And as a kid, I loved it. I would cheer that person on as they were climbing a ladder, trying to balance a plate of Jell-O on their head to retrieve an object, or hustle through some crazy obstacle course of hurdles and hoops, wearing clown feet or carrying an egg on a spoon. Years later, after a couple of decades of being in the advertising business, I realized that a lot of what we do in our daily lives is just about as silly. You know, it's pretty funny out there sometimes. You know, we have to live in this world, but we don't have to ride the roller coaster of its highs and lows. We don't have to do that, but we do. We're just kind of drawn to that. At the end of the day, we're generally so tired from all that running back and forth, that obstacle course that we run, that we tend to just flop on the couch and look for some other distraction to take us away. But we don't have to do that. When we step back and look at the world from an objective perspective, that constant repetition of our roller coaster behavior does not exactly support the claim that we are the most intelligent creatures on this planet. Today, again, we're talking about whether or not God hides the truth. That's not the real mystery here. The mystery is, why do we continue to do things that we do for a moment's pleasure that inevitably lead to pain and problems that seem to last longer than the pleasure? Well, we do them because people around us are doing them. It's peer pressure. It's conformity based on a model that is neither efficient nor effective. Much of what I appreciate about Ananda and about people here is that there is so much less of that roller coaster behavior going on. People here certainly are not immune to the ego's interference. God knows I'm not. But we are moving in another direction, in an inward direction. And I am deeply grateful to be surrounded by that positive, progressive, more productive influence. The world is going to continue to be that bizarre place to have landed. But Ananda does provide the antidote. We know where the truth lies. As Chidambar said, it's right in here. And when you look for it there, it's in plain view. God bless.